Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey, everyone. This is the Macko and Cos podcast. We talk about sports and stuff, which is a stupid idea because sports are stupid and dumb. Hi, Bob.
Matt, I'm going to intervene here with something that sounds like advice, but is really judgment. That's my style.
Yep.
You do not have the right to be glum. Your team is up 2-1. And yes, they lost yesterday, but it was a good game. It was a close game. It was ruined by the president. We can debate that. You don't have the right to be glum.
Okay? Counter.
Yes.
Fuck off. They were up by 7 going in. They're up 2-0 in the series. They started the third quarter like they started the first with 2 bad turnovers. Also, another thing, Bob, I have contacted our sponsor, our lawyer, and our friend, Jeff Pollock, if you want to get him at jeffpollock.com, because we are going to start a class action lawsuit. I'm not sure what class action means. I think it's like a lot of people, because the fouls in the second half. Oh, no. How about Victor Wembanyama in the first quarter grabbing Brunson by the neck and shoving him down, and there was no call? We are suing the referees, Bob.
Weren't you the one who said the Leafs during the playoffs, you just wished they would put someone through the boards? Isn't that exactly the kind of behavior that Victor demonstrated on Jalen Brunson? Willing to push the physical boundaries?
No, it's the dirty French. The dirty, dirty French. They force me to take it till grade 9, and then they force Brunson onto the ground. Shame on that whole country and their delicious, delicious wine. Yeah, and their food. Oh, and the duck. So
have
good.
Have you noticed that nobody's nicknamed him the Maginot Line?
You're the best nickname I heard.
You can't call him that because he works. By the way, that's a joke for all you history nerds out there.
Yeah, it is. Vic in a box.
That's the best one.
Bill Simmons podcast. They were talking about different defenses using Victor Wembanyama. Vic in a box is so good. Anyway, we'll get to the game. You're right. It was a close game. The one thing I never understood going into it, everyone was saying it's over. Like Barkley saying it's done. Like I was like, San Antonio lost the first two games and they had a lead late. They were down 3-2 to the Thunder and they beat the number one team in the NBA. I did not understand anyone thinking, oh, the Knicks have wrapped it up.
Although I did send you a text before the game started and I said, I think San Antonio wins tonight. And you responded, ding dong, you're wrong.
I did.
Although that may have just been wish fulfillment.
I did bet after the Knicks won game 2, I bet $33 on the Spurs to win the title, which would get me back like $106. So I'm doing my best to cover my bases because I'm a coward as a sports fan. I'm emotionally all over the place, but the Spurs were they were the better team. They didn't turn the ball over. They didn't have the amount of fouls. They executed, and the Knicks had too many dumb turnovers in that game last night.
It was a good game and it was a close game. What really jumped out at me, and this is very surprising for such a young team, is that the Spurs were pretty composed. They were composed in the face of that crowd. They were composed in the face of the precipice in the finals, where if they lose, it's all but over. I mean, can't get higher stakes than that. In some ways, it's higher stakes than if you're down 3-0, because a 3-0, it's over. Like, what pressure is there really? But this is like literally the last fight before the end, and they faced that really well, came out strong and focused, and they executed, like they hit 10 of 10 free throws down the stretch, and that, like, Stephon Castell hitting those big free throws, like, everybody will talk about the crazy lucky three that he hit, that kind of kept the Spurs momentum going when it looked like the Knicks were pushing back. I thought the free throws were more impressive. You're standing there at the line. You're 22 years old, 21 years old. It's your first final, and you drill 2 of them. If I was going to be worried, if I was you, the only thing I would worry about is that the Spurs seem to be figuring the Knicks out a little bit, and they seem to be calm about it. And that means this could go either way from here on in.
Calm is a good word because it's such a contrast between game two, where near the end, Wembanyama wasn't calm. And you're right. It's one thing for Stephen Castle to hit the bailout three-pointer with no time on the shot clock that turned a four-point game into a seven-point game. Right. But the free throws, when you've got time to get in your head and he hit them, that level of calm from those guys and Dylan Harper as well, yeah, they figured it out. Just they were steady in that fourth quarter. They were steady when the Knicks hit a couple late threes to maybe put a bit of fear in them. And there was no collapse. Whatever collapses we saw from the Spurs in game one or two, that did not exist at all in that fourth quarter.
And the Knicks are so good at putting pressure on teams with those crazy runs, particularly in the fourth. The peak moment for that was game one against the Cavs when they came back from like 20 down in the most improbable fashion. It's been a series of runs so far, but the Knicks, like, they take on this inevitability when they get going, and the Spurs were able to weather it. You know, there was this one moment that really captured it for me. It was the Stephon Castle free throws, but with Wemby, maybe even more so, because there was about 10 seconds left on the clock at the end of the third. And Wemby had the ball, and he's coming up court, and he goes over half court, and I think, oh, he's getting ready to chuck it, because that's what he's been doing, right? Like these kind of buzzer beater, chuck it up from three. He gets to the three-point line, Towns is on him, and he drives. And that told me, like, he's very aware. He's very aware of the moment. He's very aware of what he's done. And it was almost like an autocorrect. The temptation was to chuck it because that's dramatic. But the smarter play was to drive, maybe pick up a foul, whatever. If the Spurs are going to play that way, I don't know.
Listen, Spurs can absolutely win the title. This wasn't me being scared Knicks fan after they won on Friday night and just all the PTSD. Is, you know, they have proof of concept. They lost game one against Minnesota. They won game two by 38. They lose game five against the Thunder. They win game six at home and game seven on the road. Like, they, as you said, they are learning as they go. They are just starting to mesh into this playoff machine. And I'm left thinking, Adam Silver, after dealing with whatever with the Clippers, whatever with tanking, whatever with flopping, we need socialism. It's basketball. It's the lefty sport of the socialists. Of course, everyone who had a ticket last night was a capitalist. We need to redistribute the wealth. They cannot have Castle and Dylan Harper and Wemby on the same team. Fuck that shit. They're not allowed to have that. Like, all those guys... Like, I feel Dylan Harper could be the best player on a team that could win a championship. I think Stephen Castle could be the number two best player on a team that wins a championship. And they're all under 25.
And they have De'Aaron Fox, who's banged up right now, but it's an all-NBA player in his
career. And he had his best game last night.
Yeah, that's bad for the Knicks, too. You know, I want to get off Wemby and come back to it for a second, because I feel like the framing device on this pod for this series was my proclamation that I'd rather take Jalen Brunson over Victor Wembanyama if I had to draft players for this series. He had 32 last night, Jalen Brunson did. He's 32, 5, and 5. He has an entire team trying to stop him. Like, the Spurs plan is clearly, like, shut down Brunson. And he's 6 feet tall, and they're throwing these big, strong guards at him, and they're throwing forwards at him, and he's taking a shit kicking, and I think he's probably banged up. He looks like he's maybe a little banged up at least. Victor is inherently amazing because of how he looks, but I feel like we're not giving Brunson enough credit for how amazing it is that a 6 foot guard in the finals against a team as big and strong and physical as the Spurs is putting up 30 plus points and driving that offense and drawing all of the attention to him. He's been amazing.
He has been. You know me, one of my favorite lenses is degree of difficulty.
Yes.
And I'm consistent on this. In the last round, I've said on this pod, I said on radio, I did not care about the Stephen Castle turnovers. For some of those games, they had no De'Aaron Fox. They had no Dylan Harper going up against the Thunder's incredible perimeter defense. I did not give a shit. With Jalen Brunson, I don't care about the shooting percentage. There's some open shots that he's got to hit, but he's being guarded by one of the best perimeter defenders in Castle. Then there's going to be other incredible perimeter defenders on him. And then if he gets past that, there's Victor Wembanyama waiting at the end. There's no one right. There's no one that's got a hard, bigger degree of difficulty in either the NBA or the NHL finals than what Jalen Brunson is dealing with right now. And the defense is so good on him. I'm always amazed when he finds a way to get a shot off. And then on top of that, the flagrant fouls. That was absolutely flagrant foul in the first by Wembanyama. And the guys were debating in the second quarter when Stephen Castle just rammed into him. You know, that looked like a tackling drill in the NFL or in Alabama in the summer when there was no NCAA oversight about what you could do to the kids. That's what that looked like. So, yeah, like it's incredible what he did last night.
I can't say that I was right to pick Jalen over Wemby, because Wemby has been pretty amazing, too. He didn't have the best second game, but, you know, he's averaging 30 points and over 10 boards, and he's playing literally best defense in the world. Somehow, like, that seems like standard for him. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
It's crazy.
So the stupidity of the point of taking Jalen first, I think, has gone away. Like, these guys, I'm not saying they're playing each other necessarily to a draw. Wemby's been a little more able to adapt than I thought he would be. And Brunson is who we thought he was. So, yeah, amazing. Like, it's just two incredible players. I want to ask you about that physicality, because you and I are fans of old-time basketball. Do you like basketball better when they're beating the shit out of each other? Or would you rather see maybe 15 to 20 points more and a little bit more dazzling out there?
Okay, so the perfect case scenario, you know, when someone says, well, my favorite weather, late June, it's nice and warm, but not too hot. It's like, oh, great, asshole. So you like perfect. I bet you hate lineups. You're the one that hates lineups and traffic. Look at you, unique person. In a perfect world, physicality, you don't have the goonery that impedes pretty offense. But then the problem is, okay, so then, you know, what you really want is physicality, but not dirtiness, which is hard to have, and the officials doing the right job. You can't have it all. Like, you can't. I do like the physicality. I will say this, and this is the most biased thing I'm going to say, Bob. There was clearly no star treatment for Jalen Brunson last night at home in game 3.
Yeah, and honestly, like, we were complaining that Victor was getting mugged too much throughout the playoffs. So
last night was a course correction.
No. Yeah, fair enough. Ask me the same question. Which, what do I want?
What do you want? Do you want 1994 or 2017 Golden State Warriors?
What do you think I'm going to say?
94. Club them. Club them.
I want Bloodsport. I want Van Damme out there. I want Kumite. You know, Mega ruined UFC for me. This is the closest I can get these days. I love it because players have to adjust.
Yep.
It's not just skill on skill. Skill on skill is great, but it's a little bit like a video game that way. The best thing about sports is my effort versus your effort. You know, we love heart more than we love talent. And when talent and heart go together, that's the best. But I will maintain that when it comes to who we love as fans, we will take heart over talent. And this is evidenced by the fact that there's lots of guys with tons of talent and not so much heart, and they're villains. We hate them because they feel like they're wasting their talent. So I'm going to say, watching these guys beat each other up and hard fouls and really just, like, everything, like, somebody crosses half court with the ball and two players are suddenly on them. Like, they are just putting it all out there on the line. And it's a joy to watch. Honestly, in the NHL playoffs, too, like, they're fighting so hard. I can't remember the last time where we've had two series this good with this much history going on at the same time in the finals. This has been a blessed June.
You're right. We've been absolutely spoiled as sports fans in these finals. And you're right. If you have to choose, I will sacrifice some of the aesthetic that comes with pretty offensive basketball for basketball where everyone is being very offensive to each other with the level of physicality, because there is a level of heart, and because every basket made feels a little bit more special because you got to work a little bit harder to get that ball in that basket.
Everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. Is there anything else from that game you want to go over last night?
A couple quick things. I heard this stat somewhere. It was, I think, in the third quarter. The Knicks shooting percentage when Wembanyama was on the court, 38%. When he's off the court, 56%. That's crazy.
That's crazy. There's like one of my favorite things now in basketball is the image of someone driving towards the paint, seeing Victor, and then doing a U-turn. An immediate U-turn. Like, nope, not today. Back away, disco lady.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And it's so funny. I feel so bad for Luke Kornet because, like, listen, every team has the trope. Oh, the better center sits, so the backup comes in, and maybe the other team tries a little bit harder. But the moment Wembanyama leaves, everyone is like, Captain Caveman! They're just like Luke Kornet is like, would someone settle for a motherfucking jump shot? Do you have to drive at me every time? Like, I feel so bad for that guy.
He's the substitute teacher. He's the guy that he walks in and everyone goes, well, today doesn't count. Let's have some fun.
He's the substitute teacher in June. He's not the substitute teacher in October where you still have to care about your grades.
Quick sidebar. My daughter sent us a picture of her class at 3 p.m. yesterday.
Uh-huh.
It was except for her. She said, can I come home? I've done my work and I'm sitting in the class by myself. It was an empty class and she was sitting there. Welcome to June.
I have follow-ups to that, but your daughter, good student. Very good student.
You know, she's an okay student. She's a bit of a Makowitz.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is she going to do, is she going to do the dick thing where, you know, with like final exams or final essays where she knows the score with the grades?
Yeah, she does do that. She's already figured out what, look, Matt, you're hardly one to criticize. You are the master of this. What do I need to do to get what I need out of this so I can move on and do something I want to do more?
That's true. It's a good move.
You know, someone said, and I take this as a parent to heart, and all you parents out there are like, what about my kids who are struggling at school or whatever? One of the reasons that the famous observation CEOs tend to be C students is they actually broke it down. And the reason was they don't waste their time on things they don't need. They put their time into things they know they need, and they don't waste time on things they don't. And so they're sitting there in school thinking most of this doesn't matter. And they're just not wired to pretend. But right. You give them something that does matter, and they turn to life. And I guarantee you, parents who are listening to this right now are going, that's totally my kid. And you know what? Your kid is on a path to success.
And all the other parents, parent better next time. Exactly. And that is another lesson from parenting advice from professional uncle Matthew Cause. Coming up next, let your kid eat peanut butter and a pack of dirt and let them go outside and stop tracking them wherever they're going.
Oh, the tracking is so good, though. OG is just a joy to watch.
Yeah.
And the thing I love so much about it is how happy I am watching him and how little joy he seems to get out of it. Like, he's just so serious out there. He's like the definition of all business. But he plays such a physical game. He is just so strong and forceful. It's just, man, when he's hitting shots, it's just because he plays hard defense all the time. But when he's hitting his three and, you know, he's at 15, 16 points and he's doing all this stuff, you're like, how did we let this guy go? You know, he's not that all the time and he gets hurt a lot. But when he is that guy, God, he's a joy to watch.
Two games in a row, he has driven and dunked on Wemby.
I know.
And after he did it last night, I immediately, you know, said to Amy, I'm like, oh, second game in a row. And then moments later, they had the dunk from game two. One other thought. I'm now officially bored with ticket prices talk. I don't care anymore about what it is to get in, and it's rising and now it's sinking. And do you know how expensive it is to sit next to Larry David? I don't give a fuck anymore. I'm just, I don't know. The story now bores me.
So what am I doing right now?
You're smiling.
So I have something to tell you.
What?
But I'm going to get there. I'm going to walk you on a path a bit. Okay. When it comes to FIFA, how do you think I feel about ticket prices?
You are morally abhorrent to just how gross it is, or how the city of Toronto, their strategy was a year ago to buy tickets to sell at a profit, which is now illegal to do in the city of Toronto.
So that's correct. However, I got a call from a friend who said, "Do you want to go see the game on Friday?"
Ooh.
I have completely reversed my opinion on this World Cup
Love it.
because I get to go.
Listen, Bob, you've lived a good life so far. You're allowed moments of moral hypocrisy, okay? We're all allowed to do it. If you want to walk around with your Fantino t-shirt and your FIFA number one flag, I'm giving you permission. Okay, we've got to discuss this now. What is your guys' plan of attack for when you get there, getting in and out? Are you thinking you'll be able to get a drink or food? Are you going to load up on food before, try to empty all your bowels so you don't have to line up for the bathroom? Have you thought about your plan of attack for Friday?
I absolutely have. So I'm going to have a big breakfast. The game's at 3, and so we're going to arrive somewhere between 12 and 1. They recommend you get there at 1. That really means get there at 7:30 a.m. But I think we'll be okay if we get there at noon and we're going to just walk around and check things out, but probably not eat. I suspect we won't eat, but my buddy's taking me, so I'll probably get into line and get us a couple pops because neither one of us really drink.
Yeah.
So put aside, $70, $80 for a couple of Cokes. And then we're just going to sit there and watch the game. I went out and bought us hats. I got us matching hats.
That's
There's,
so,
it's so
I was
cute,
just,
right?
yeah, that's so exciting. Sorry to interrupt. That's, listen, it is exciting. Like you're allowed to enjoy your smartphone without recognizing all the path that got that smartphone in your hand, like, or all these different things, or meat as cows that fart that kill the environment or not, or who knows. But I'm so excited for you, Bob. That's great. Are they good seats, bad seats?
I honestly don't know. I don't
Yeah.
know. My buddy is co-owner of the AFC Toronto team.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe there was a connection there because he's an owner in the world of soccer. I have no idea. I really don't care if they put us on a flagpole run off the top of the stadium and we sit in two like hammocks watching over. Like I've been to a lot of sporting events because of all my time at TSN. For some reason I feel giddy like a school kid about this one. There is a Like the only other time I've kind of felt like this is around the Olympics. It's
Makes
very cool.
sense. It's a,
Yeah, no,
it's a,
I'm re
it's the
really
biggest
excited.
global event in sports, and it's here. It's historic. I can totally see why you'd be giddy. Like, you get to be part of something special. It's Canada's first for the men's soccer program, their first game on home soil. That's super cool, Bob.
So as a result, I'm now all in on the Leafs. I love that team and everything they're doing.
There you go. Love it.
Completely changed. Hey, I do want to do a little Leafs talk with you because even though there isn't news, there's kind of news that we haven't gone over. How on earth did we almost trade Matthew Knies at the deadline? Like, you must have discussed this on your show. How did that become a thing?
Yeah, it's funny. I haven't discussed it as much because there's so much going on in sports, and 2 hours is not enough time. But yeah, I've never agreed with the trading of Matthew Knies. He is young. He is very good. He's going to get better. He's physical. It's a good contract. He seems to score a lot against Tampa. You've got to give a deal where everyone is giving Leafs an A and who they trade Knies to a B minus for me to even consider a trade.
A couple things about the organizational dysfunction around this, but when you rank what you need to win in hockey, defense, centers at the top, you can debate what's more important than others. He's not just a winger, Matthew Knies. He's a power winger. And that's clearly sitting in the bronze medal spot for what you want. Because a guy who can play a big, mean game and get you somewhere between 60 and 80 points, that is super valuable. And we had him on a good contract at 24 years old for prospects. Okay, now I'm going to flick to organizational dysfunction. How is it at the trade deadline, they wanted to trade Montreal for guys who weren't going to play next year or maybe ever, and then 6 weeks later, after abysmal losing, make the assessment we have most of what we need here already? I don't like look, if you were going to trade Knies for a player to help you win now, like Jonas Siegel wrote a piece in The Athletic, and maybe you can flip him into a Zach Werenski. Okay, I would really consider that. Maybe you can flip him into a Nico Hischier. Love that guy. Great player. Could be a great second center for the next 5, 6 years. But for prospects, I honestly think as a Leafs fan, we're so exhausted, we're not even bothering to take apart how ridiculous this organization is anymore.
Yeah, at some point you only have so much anger in the angerometer, and the angerometer is pretty much at empty. It's like Barney Gumble from The Simpsons was like, "Don't cry for me, I'm already dead." When he's, that's Leaf fans when they hear about Matthew Nyes. And by the way, if I can go geeky hockey for a second,
I would
Matthew
love to.
Nyes's Matthew Nyes's game can age. All you got to do, look at Jordan Staal scoring the game winner in game two between Montreal and Carolina, or Carolina and Vegas, excuse me. The Matthew Nyes game can age well.
I expect the Leafs will take McKenna, and that just gets you another forward, and maybe that's a reason why you feel comfortable trading Nyes, because between McKenna and Nylander, probably Tavares in a year or two. And Easton Cowan, that you're thinking, okay, well, those are some really good forwards. We're probably going to be okay. I don't think that you necessarily would want to do it, but you might say we have nothing on defense and we have some decent forwards. The don't cry for me, I'm already dead with the final back plate of fin, the end. A couple things in hockey and then the Stanley Cup. Which would you rather talk about first?
Well, my opening thought today, because I don't want to start by talking about the Knicks, is it's a tongue-in-cheek one going, "Hey, Carolina, hey, Vegas, can we have a 2-1 boring game? Could, like, listen, thank you. You've entertained the hell out of us, but one Cinnabon is delicious. Two Cinnabons, I got to take a day off work. So I'm fine. You can give us a 2-1 game. I'm totally good with that."
That was we've discussed on this on the show, like there's almost like a professional commitment to watching Carolina and Vegas. Don't really care who wins that much. But boy, am I glad I didn't bail out after four zip in that game three.
Oh, yeah.
And mentally, I did. I was sitting there on my phone playing Boggle, and it was comfortable in my basement, and so I didn't move. And it was a little late, and I thought, oh, I'll go to bed, but I'll just dick around on some of these games for a little bit. And then all of a sudden, it's 4-2. I'm like, what's happening here? Crazy game. Such a honestly, like, when was the last time two concurrent finals were this amazing to watch?
Well, think on the hockey side. In games one and two, the team that was down by two goals won. In game three, the last time a team tied after being down by four goals was like in 81, 82, when Gretzky was putting up 200-point seasons. We don't see this. Like, and Bob, to your point on Saturday, I had put on the thing. I'm like, I'm by myself, gonna pour myself a glass of red, and I'm gonna watch Kurt Russell try to figure out what the fuck's going on. Hey, look, there's Wilfred Brimley. So, and then you keep an
Who was
eye.
50 at the time?
Yeah.
I'm older than Wilfred Brimley was in that movie, and he looks 150.
Let's not do the Wilfred Brimley game. It's gonna depress both of us. But yeah, like tip of the cap to Carolina and Vegas. They did the thing where there wasn't all the sexy, meaty stories, and like, fuck it. Watch what we do on the ice. We're going to get you interested, even if you can't name half the team. It's been spectacular.
Am I mistaken that in the NBA and the NHL, no one has won a playoff home game yet? Like in this final?
No, in the NBA, it's
Oh,
true.
wait, they split it. They
Yeah,
split it.
Carolina won game two. Yeah.
Right. No, I
Yeah.
knew that couldn't be right, and I was foggy for a second. The Mitch Marner thing, I realize that it's a bit painful for us, but God, what a heater that second period was. Like, how often have you ever watched anybody in hockey ever play that good for one period?
Well, technically, no one's had a 4-point period in a Stanley Cup final. He was, yes, the first goal he scored was lucky, but throwing pucks at the net, sometimes good things happen. Oh, it's been incredible. Like, I've talked about, Marner is an excellent player that went to an even better organization. He needed Vegas more than Vegas needed him, and that's not a shot at Marner. That's an acknowledgement of how playoff hockey works in the NHL versus what happens in the NBA or in other sports.
The mere fact that in the final minute in game three, it came down to should John Tortorella challenge this call, and that was the call back to game two, Man, you can't write this stuff. It has just been fucking such a joy to watch. Yeah. Let me do a little bit about news around the league because there's some kind of like adjacent to Leaf stuff. Let's start with the rumors that Babcock could be going to the Oilers. Fingers crossed, Matt.
Please, please,
Explain.
please, please, please. But Edmonton, don't do it. Wait. Don't do it until the World Cup is done and the Jays are playing Minnesota. Do it on that day for me.
If I'm an Edmonton Oilers fan, and I'm not, but if I was one, I don't know if I would be more depressed. Like, which tr Canadian fan base has the most right to be depressed right now?
We don't have time
It's
for that, Bob.
true.
We got 5 minutes left. You can make a
Fair.
20-minute case for almost all of them, with the exception of Montreal and maybe Ottawa.
It's funny, they fire Knobloch and then Bruce Cassidy gets blocked from interviewing for the vacant position. And now they're scrambling. It's like, who do we get? What are we going to do here?
How
It's so
about
funny
this? Don't
watching.
scramble. How about this, Edmonton? Don't scramble. Be calm. Interview people. Recognize there's more than one path to success.
I'm so worried that Connor McDavid is going to be the Mike Trout of hockey, where he's just never going to win, despite being arguably one of the three most talented players who ever lived. The other news, and I think this is more relevant, is the Dylan Larkin trade rumors. And it's not relevant to the Leafs in the think that not in the sense that I think the Leafs are going to get them, but hey, Toronto fans, this is what it will look like if Austin Matthews decides to go. This is a preview of what you could be experiencing when your top line star center says, "I've had enough of this shit." Where you get, "Here's a list of my three teams. It's mini Florida and Tampa Bay. I'm sure it'll be the same for Austin."
What a loser. Dylan Larkin, what a loser. You got like 5 years left your deal, and it was Minnesota, it was Vegas, and I think Florida. It's like, I want to get traded, but only to these three teams that are the top teams in the league. Dylan Larkin is a poor, 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 poor man's Kevin Durant.
That's pretty harsh. Is this an Austin Matthews anxiety thing?
No, it's a, I don't like the athlete that goes, I want to go, but I want to go somewhere where it makes my life easier. So
Well,
I'll go to those three teams.
this raises a question because the no movement clause that puts the power into the player's hands is collectively bargained. So he's not doing anything that there aren't rules for. So I don't think it's immoral or improper. He's just playing the game and we don't have to like it. So here's a question. What has ruined sports happy for fans more? The salary cap or the no movement clause?
Oh, that's a good question.
Maybe too big for 3 minutes left. Maybe
Yeah.
we pick this up next time. But I thought about like how the cap really holds teams in place, but the new no movement clause holds teams for ransom.
Here's the very quick answer, and it's incredibly unfair to the players. If you want the greatest level of sports happy, it's got to be where the players are the most restricted. Because that helps if you've got a team with good players and maybe you're not in the best market. People go, oh, so you love owners? No, I love me. And if even if it means the players are restricted, if that helps my sports happy, then I'm apologies to the middle linebacker, the second line center, or the power forward. But I like my players in place because it provides structure. And it can also protect my if I have a dumb owner from doing dumb things. So I'm sorry, players. I'm not siding with you, not because of capitalism, socialism, pro owner, pro worker. I'm just pro me.
The things that are good for the players seem to be not as good for the fans. The
That's
things that are good for the owners seem to be better for the fans, generally speaking. This is a real tough show for me. I'm going to the World Cup and I'm siding with the owners, and Avi Lewis is going to hear about this and yell at me. Maybe it's just the new me, Matt. Maybe it's just the new me.
I love it, Bob. Well, enjoy the game. This is a great time for you not to have a driver's license and enjoy being in the den of capitalism. Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.